Good afternoon, everybody, and good evening, I guess, to those who might be in Israel watching with Jacqueline, so, or anywhere you happen to be. I am holding my advanced reading copy, and you'll not be surprised to know that because Jacqueline's in Israel, we aren't actually offering autographed books for this particular occasion. We're delighted to be talking about a mystery set in Provence. So I would like to say, Megan, why don't you introduce yourself? And then Jacqueline can too, since I'm obviously completely off the wall at the moment.
Okay, hi, I'm Megan Collins. I'm a thriller author. My books are The Winter Sister, Behind the Red Door, The Family Plot, and the upcoming Thicker Than Water, which comes out this summer. And I mean, that's pretty much all there is to say. I was a teacher for a while. I taught creative writing, and now I'm a full-time writer. And Jacqueline, why don't you tell us about you?
I'm Jacqueline. I live in Tel Aviv, and this is my first thriller, Chateau. I used to be a lawyer, and now I write mystery thrillers.
Is there a connection between being a lawyer and living in Tel Aviv?
Zero. it's where I went to when I left law.
Wow. Well, next time I talk to Jonathan and Faye Kellerman, I will send them your email because they now have a home in Tel Aviv where
really?
They go. So there's a little bit of an expat writing community. My husband is Jewish, and the one place that we haven't been is Israel. And I keep nagging at him about, you know, we should definitely go.
Well, I would love to see you if you come.
It's very nice. We've talked to some other authors who live in Israel. Only one of them, if I can recall, actually Israeli. So is there kind of a big expat community in Israel?
No, it's interesting that you're saying it. I want you to introduce me to everyone because I don't really know that many expat writers here. So.
All right, I will do that. Well, anyway, despite the fact that you are currently in Israel and a lawyer, you have chosen Provence. So let me ask both of you, what is the lure of Provence for crime writers? Because there actually have been maybe at least half a dozen in the last year. Is it the setting between the Peter Mayle kind of vision of Provence and a dark, wicked side? What do you think?
For me, it was actually not that. It was... I was thinking about using like a World War II kind of storyline in the book. And when I thought about atmospheric places in Western Europe and I was kind of narrowing it down, I thought about Provence. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it's a very, you know, picturesque place, Peter Mayle, that kind of thing. So that felt enticing to me.
Megan, your thoughts?
I have like a ton of questions about the setting of this book for Jacqueline because it's just so rich and there's so much to explore there. So I don't know if you want me to just
means. I was just sort of getting us started, but yeah. This is your conversation, so I'll just sit back here and breathe.
Okay. Well, before we get into the setting, I just want to like lay the groundwork for what we're talking about here. So do you want to just give like the quick premise of the book and tell us a little bit about the book?
Yeah, definitely. So it is a dream girls trip set in a luxurious chateau in Provence that devolves into murder. And it starts with the lady of the chateau, Seraphine de Margolas, inviting her granddaughter, Darcy, and Darcy's three friends to the chateau. And the girls studied abroad together in Provence 20 years before, but they haven't, and they used to visit Seraphine on the weekends. So it like created their bond, but they haven't seen her in over 20 years. And she doesn't really say why she's inviting them. And so they arrive at the chateau and she says she has something important to tell them. And then she's brutally murdered. And the book devolves from there and the friends begin to suspect each other and the chateau houses many secrets. Mm-hmm. Some worth killing for.
Yeah. It's such a great premise. It's immediately, I remember like I was lucky enough to be asked to read it early and I think it must have been your editor sent over the description and I was like, yes, 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 that has all the things that I want to read in a thriller. So it just really hooks you right away. And I'm wondering where you got the inspiration for it. Like what was the initial seed of the idea for that? And did it come from the setting and building it up from there? Or was it more about the characters or this idea of a woman that dies right after she says, I have this big thing to tell you?
Yeah, I think that I saw the setting first. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it works for you, but sometimes I get images and I have like a scene or two that I can just see really clearly. Mm-hmm. And so there's one, I won't spoil it, but I did see something like early on and I saw it in a chateau. And when I said earlier, I was thinking about connecting World War II history to the book. And that's kind of like, I really had an idea because I haven't seen a contemporary thriller use World War II. Yeah. And so I really thought about that because I have family background and that kind of meshed with the, because there's a lot of World War II history. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. So did you base this chateau that's in the book off of a specific place that you've seen, or was it more so like this dream big estate house for you?
Yeah. So I wrote this during, I guess, more towards the like end of the pandemic when there weren't lockdowns, but people weren't traveling as much. And so I didn't mm-hmm. go to France, but I had been to Saint-Rémy, the town where I set it in. And I like adored Saint-Rémy. It was 10 years ago, but I thought like, even then, this would be such a good place to set a book. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't been to a chateau there. And I feel like, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like we're so lucky as authors today to have like YouTube and Instagram and all of that. And there was a chateau on Instagram. I don't even remember how I found it, but, and I won't pronounce it because I'll totally butcher it. it's so stunning. And I was like, that chateau, I just would stare at pictures of it and mm-hmm. I'd like describe it.
That's awesome. I always think about that too. Like if you were writing anytime before the internet, basically, and you physically could not go to the country if you were setting it somewhere else, like what did you do? Like, yeah. I guess look at encyclopedias or something, but that's not nearly as immersive as what we have now. And so that's really great that you were able to take advantage of that and kind of build it from there. And it's such a, it's again, it's like catnip for thriller readers because it's just like, I love like an eerie house. I love a house with secrets. I love, and then of course this gorgeous cover where like when you saw this, like were you just like, yep, that's it?
Oh my
Did
God,
you actually I'm... show them like reference photos of what you had?
Like, yeah, sort of I showed them. I made a Pinterest board using most of the chateau that I was stalking on Instagram. but honestly, they like, they reimagined it in just a way I never would have been able to describe. Like they got mm-hmm. it so much better than my Pinterest board got it. when I saw it, I gasped. It's so mm-hmm. good.
Yeah,
and I feel like
so
the
gorgeous.
Feedback uniformly has been that like people love it, which is so cool.
Yeah, it's so, I like everything from the colors to the composition of it. It's just like gorgeous. And I love that it really feels like what reading the book feels like. Like mm-hmm. this sounds so weird, but like that is the color of the plot. Like those colors, like it's
I feel
that.
Like
it's
a compliment. Thank you.
It's just like that moodiness, that like something dark is stirring here. So like it's just awesome. So in terms of the plot and the story itself, so I was trying to go back through and count because this is written from multiple points of view, switching throughout, and I counted six, but I think there's more than that even, and I'm
and then there's
sure.
one like one chap yeah there's a seventh yeah. that has one chapter.
Okay. But each one adds so much like intrigue and great texture to the story, but that is a lot of voices to write from, which I imagine was a really big challenge. So like what was your process there? How did you go about finding each voice and making sure that each point of view felt distinct? Was it as big of a challenge as I imagine it was, or is that just something that kind of comes naturally to you?
I think the challenge, like I like writing from a lot of POVs, that feels really fun to me. But I think the challenge here was that it's four women who are all the same age. And mm-hmm. that was difficult because I don't feel like definitely in the first drafts, I didn't nail it. I felt like some of the voices were blending a little bit. So I hope I like ultimately succeeded at differentiating at them. But yeah, I found that difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I think you did a great job because I I tend to struggle with that a little bit. I love reading multi POV stories because they tend to just like move a lot faster and the pacing is really exciting. But I do sometimes get to a point where I'm like, wait, whose story am I in at this point? But I never felt that way with this book. I think because each character's storyline and like secret that they're keeping is so distinct. And so I really loved that about it. So I think you did an amazing job.
Thank you.
And with that in mind,
I'm going to interrupt for just a second, Megan, before we go too far on. I think that, you know, the house, I agree that the cover is great. And I think the chateau is, you know, important to this story, but what it also brings is a kind of Gothic feel, because Gothic has been creeping in quite a lot over the last 2 or 3 years, sometimes improperly referred to. I mean, what is Gothic? That's all different discussion. But essential to the Gothic is a great house. I mean, the fall of the House of Usher, Rebecca, you know, whatever it is. And I do think that that adds not just the countryside, you know, all the glamour and romance of Provence, but by using the chateau, you introduce a somewhat Gothic or darker element to this very sunny place. And also, in relation to World War II stories, a lot of them focus on Paris or Normandy, you know, where the action is. But there was a lot that went on in southern France. Although Provence, if I remember right, is in Vichy France. It's not, you know, it's not in free France, so to speak. Well, you know. Anyway, so there wasn't as much actual fighting or occupation, but nonetheless, it was seriously affected by the war. So you took that into account. I mean, there's so many World War II stories. I mean, there are just every, you know, they keep bubbling up, and most of them are women's stories right now, which I also find interesting. They're not so much military stories, you know, but stories about all kinds of effects from the war on families and on, you know, civilian occupations. Librarians have had a big role recently in World War II stories. Amazing. So did you do that on purpose, you know, to take it away from, because you could have, you know, you could have written a book about Paris if you'd wanted to in terms of World War II.
Yeah, I didn't even consider Paris because I think there's something about that maybe I'm a little bit more interested in countryside than city, writing about cities. And at least I was for this book. But yeah, I didn't think about Paris. And I also, maybe because Paris, like you said, has been done more. So it just, I thought Provence was like a little bit different, even though, as you said, there have been a lot of thrillers in that area. But yeah, the World War II angle, I thought, was like fresh.
No, I like the juxtaposition of Provence and, you know, the war and the dark story. I think it's very well done. Anyway, sorry, but I just wanted to mention the Gothic before we wandered off from that point.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to say too, part of the Provence thing for me, I totally forgot, is that there's a Van Gogh connection. And I wanted to bring in like the artwork thing also. So that worked for me.
Yeah, the Gothic nature of it is definitely, like I said, like catnip for thriller readers. Like that was another thing that I'm just like, yep, that ticks my boxes right away. So going back to the point of views and the multi narratives, I'm really curious to hear what was your favorite point of view to write, and if there's anything you can tell us without like getting into spoiler territory about why it was your favorite to write.
I feel like, well, hands down for me, it was the grandmother, because she, I don't know, that character to me just like came to me. It felt, I just heard her talking in my head. I could really see her, and maybe, I don't know, but maybe it was just easier for me also because she was very distinct, where like the girls I was trying to keep distinct, but sometimes that was harder. But I just loved her, that she was like such a strong character, and she had so many secrets at the beginning. I don't know. I really liked writing her.
Yes. Well, I loved reading her. So
thank you. And then I'm listening to the audiobook, and the woman, I mean, they're all fabulous. Like they did a 7-person cast, which is so amazing. And oh my God, they're so good. And the woman who plays Seraphine is so good. Like they have French actors, and anyway.
Oh, nice. I love like a full cast book when there's that many voices. It's just like that much more immersive. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's so cool.
So like I said, I was lucky enough to read this early and write a blurb for it. And in my blurb, I called it, I have the quote up here, a labyrinth of secrets and intersecting mysteries, because it really does feel like every time you turn a corner or turn the page, as it were, there's a new reveal or a new big thing a character has been hiding. And I'm curious if you knew every character's secret, like before you sat down to write, or did you discover them as you went along? What was that?
Well, I'm so curious about how you do this too. But for me, I mean, I guess it's like the plotter pantser thing, but for me, I feel that I plot everything. I spend months plotting before I write. I wish I could be like someone who dives in and just sees what gives me, but I don't know, that's not me. So I knew everything going in. I don't know, I guess every book like has a challenge, and this book for me was like the ending. I couldn't figure that out, but I knew all the secrets along the way until the ending.
Yeah, that's
how do you, yeah, what do you, how do you do it?
I'm the same exact way. I have to know like I start with the premise and then I have to know the ending. Like I kind of go from premise to ending, and then I figure out, okay, like what's going to be the midpoint reveal or twist. And then from there, I like fill in the gaps from beginning to middle and middle to end. But also I understand, like, especially when you're working with this many threads of a story, like being unsure about what that ending would be. And so what point in the process did you discover that ending? Was it still?
Well, I knew everything until the last chapter. Like I knew how it ended, but I knew it wasn't like, I ended the book and then I was like, it's not right. Like there's something else I'm missing. And so to figure out what I was missing took a while.
Well, I love how it ends. So I'm glad that whatever struggle it took, you got there in the end, because it's awesome. And so what is your process for kind of figuring out, I mean, and this might be difficult to answer because I think some of these things are really intuitive, but like, how did you figure out when to reveal certain secrets? Because like, I picture you have so many things going on. Like I picture you needing like a spreadsheet of like, these are the things, this is what they know now, this is what they don't know, this is what this person is keeping. Like, how did you keep track of all that for yourself? How do you generally know when to kind of let those secrets go and let the reader find them out?
Yeah, I don't know if it's like for better or for worse, but I feel like I'm such an intuitive, like when I'm writing, I don't have spreadsheets. I mean, I have an outline and I'm conscious of where I'm going and where, like you said, the midpoint and the, you know, like I know I want to hit the climax and I know where I guess I want the secrets to come out, but I'm not planning it like on a chapter level. I think that feels more like intuitive. And I always think like about my next day's writing. Sometimes in the morning, like when I take a walk, I'm like, okay, well, where is it going today? And who's talking? what character's talking? But I don't know. I'm not sure it's the best way. It's just, yeah, that's how I do it.
No, I mean, it makes total sense. If somebody asked me the same question, I'd be like, I don't know. I guess, like, I think, and this is how I felt reading the book, like, what I always strive to do is like have each chapter, like, well, the first couple chapters raise a lot of questions. And then I like to have like a question be answered and a new question be raised kind of every time. And it felt like that a lot in this book, because we're finding things out, but then it's like new things come in that we're like, well, how is that going to play out? And I just felt like the pacing of that was really expertly unraveled. So you did such a good job with that.
Thank you.
You said that your debut was historical women's fiction. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So now obviously you're in this mystery thriller space. What made you want to make that change? Was it just you got this story idea, or had you wanted to write thrillers for a while? What was that like for you?
So it's like it's a long convoluted route, as a lot of things in publishing seem to be, because when I wrote my first one that was published, you know, it took a while to sell it. And then it took like another 2 years to come out or something. So in that like whole process, I had written two other books and they were like more contemporary women's fiction. And because of the pandemic, we were like kind of waiting to send them out. And so, because we had to wait to sell them until my first one came out. Anyway, in the meantime, I was like realizing that all I was reading for years was like thrillers. And I was like, and I don't know, something really intimidated me about it of like, I want to write one, but they seem really hard to write, you know, with, and then I was like, okay, well, I have time where, you know, we haven't submitted my book that we were going to submit. And I was like, I'm just going to try a thriller. And I wrote it really quickly. And I was really excited about it, like kind of maybe more excited about the other books. And I just sent it to my agent and we were going to go out with one of my other ones. And then when she read this, she was like, let's go out with this first. And, you know, I was happy about that because I was excited about the other books, but I really just want to write thrillers now. Like that feels really like my, I don't know. So I'm grateful that I had that time. You know, sometimes things happen. Yeah. Sometimes things take a long time and I was upset about it or like wanting to hurry it up. And then it really was like for the best. I feel grateful. So
let me ask a question since I have a somewhat similar background. What prompted you to leave your career in law and decide to become a writer? I mean, you left your Chicago law firm. And why? I mean, was it the creative thing that really, I mean, law's not necessarily creative. It can be, but ideally it really isn't.
You know, I always wanted to write novels. Like that's always what I really wanted to do. I wouldn't say law was ever my passion. And I always knew I really like was hoping to like take some time off and really try for it. And I ended up staying as a lawyer for longer than maybe I thought, like over 7 years. And then it really felt like the right time to try this. And, you know, I felt like I had a career to fall back on. And I also really didn't want to be living in Chicago anymore. So that made it easier. It was like, let me leave. I ended up traveling the world for a year and I thought I would go back to the States and I ended up coming to Tel Aviv and kind of never leaving. So,
Well, I can relate to that. I grew up in Chicago. I actually grew up in Winnetka. So, you know, now I'm in Arizona. So the weather is definitely a factor. But what kind of law, what I was really interested in is what kind of law did you practice? Because the skills that many lawyers have to acquire in order to be successful also translate to writing novels.
Absolutely. I really liked the law I practiced. I really enjoyed my job. I practiced estate planning. And it like really requires you to think in this really critical way. So maybe that actually helps me write thrillers, to be honest. I hadn't thought about that, but it definitely improved my writing. I worked for such, you know, amazing writers. Like I remember as a first year that I would write something and they would just tear it all up. And I think I really learned to write concisely from being a lawyer. So.
Well, you also learn to be edited if you're a lawyer. You know, you've heard mentioned several drafts of this book. And, you know, I'm not sure readers are aware sometimes that the book you set out to write is not necessarily the book that ended up being published because it does, you know, it is a collaborative process, not like television or script writing, but nonetheless, you do go through editing and so forth, or you edit yourself and you recognize you didn't stick a certain point or characters need this or that. And I think lawyers, also reporters, take well, you know, to that process because they've already learned it.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so one thing you said when you were just talking about the process of writing this book, you said that you wrote it really fast. And so I'm always fascinated by people who write things really fast. So when you say that, how long did it take you to write this, like to the point where you sent it to your agent?
I think I wrote it in 3 months and sent it to her like a month after that.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it was pretty fast. But you know what? I plotted it for three or four months before that. So then I feel like it's so clear in my mind that that's normally how I write. I actually usually write books like that fast, maybe. But I spent so much time plotting it that I feel like we factored into it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like I do a lot of, like I front load a lot of the work with the outlining and the plotting to the point where my outlines, I don't know if this is the same with you, but mine are like obnoxiously detailed, like dialogue and everything. So sometimes it almost feels like just transcribing instead of.
Totally. And when you can see it in your mind like that, where you can like really see the whole book, I don't know, it makes it, I think, faster to write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do think that, like, the same thing is what you said before, like, I'm always look at the people who are pantsers and who just like, it comes to them in the moment. I'm like, wow, that seems so magical. But I also know that my brain could never work that way, because if I was faced with the possibility of, I don't know what's coming next, like that would just be paralyzing to me. Is that kind of how you are too?
Yeah, I feel the same. And it's funny. I just heard a podcast with Lisa Jewell, and she would think how she like pantses, but also like almost never has to do edits, and her books are so unbelievable. I'm like, it blew my mind. I'm like, how? Yeah. I'm like, it's one or the other. It's not like both.
That's sort of an upsetting fact to learn. Yeah. I don't know how that's possible.
I don't think that will ever be my process.
Since it was so different going from the types of books you were writing to then writing this thriller, what do you feel like you learned as a storyteller in writing this book? What did you do that you'd never really done before that was totally new to you? Like, what do you feel like you have as a tool under your belt that you maybe didn't before?
I mean, I feel like thrillers, you know, in terms of clues and red herrings and it's not like, I think in say historical, it's not like you're dropping this whole red herring avenue that's never going to come to fruition.
Yeah.
That's not really what happens, or that's not what you really need to rely on in those books, but here you do. So I think it's a different way of thinking about storytelling in that way, but I enjoy it. It's like kind of fun, you know, it's like swerve right, but I don't know. It's like, it's kind of a game a little bit, and that feels really fun to me.
I know what you mean, like it's almost like it's like a fun thing to be like, how can I manipulate my readers a little bit into thinking that this is where I'm gonna go, and then I'm not actually gonna go there. But then it's almost like you have to plant so many of those, because there's going to be the thing that they start thinking because no one's mentioned it yet as a possibility.
Right.
But then there needs to be another thing that is also the thing that was never mentioned as a possibility. So like, I don't know. I'm always struggling with like how many red herrings to put in and how much like, is it just, because I know that thriller readers a lot of times are like basing their enjoyment off a book off of whether or not they could predict it or not. And for some people, like they want to get it right. And some people are like, oh, like I knew it was going to happen. But I've personally kind of reached the point where I'm like, thriller readers are really smart. They've read a lot of these mysteries and these puzzles, and a lot of them are going to see the things. So for me, it's just like, I'm going to put this in there and like, hopefully it leads them down this direction. But if not, like, I hope they're interested to see what happens if their prediction comes correct. Like, how does that impact the characters?
Yeah. Because sometimes even if you guess it, it's like for a different reason, or it's, you know, as long as there's some sort of twist that they didn't foresee about it, I feel like that's still, then that still lands.
Yeah.
It's funny. I don't know about you, but as a reader, I never get, like, I'm so bad at guessing when I never figure it out. I'm always on the wrong track. So it's really funny. Maybe my reader brain is just really different than my writer brain, I guess, because I really never figure it out.
Yeah. I feel like I'm probably like, I'm getting better at it, but I'm probably like 50-50. Sometimes I have an inkling and sometimes I'm like, I just have no idea. But yeah, it seems like we should have all the answers as the thriller writers ourselves, but no, they're fooling us just the same.
100%, I'm always fooled.
which is why it's so fun to still like be reading thrillers and like being inspired by like a Lisa Jewell, who apparently can just sit down and write it and then has all these surprising twists.
It's wild.
Yeah.
she's had a lot of practice, ladies. So
she has.
Speaking as a reader, there are a lot of reasons to enjoy a book. I'm not going to name the author, but I just finished a well-known author's new book. And I think any reader could figure out probably in the first 50 pages who the bad actor is and mm-hmm. probably why. But what it really is, it's a very stunning portrait of grief. Mm-hmm. And you know, you could read it for that way. Not every book is going to from an author is going to have the same impact. It's not, you know, some ideas are just better than others. Some execution is better than others. But sometimes, you know, as a reader, you can enjoy something other than the twists. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, I'm going to sell this book I just mentioned for that. Not, mm-hmm. you know, not because it's going to dazzle them, you know, with a mini twist. And actually, I think twist is a word being overused.
Definitely.
Marketing thrillers. You know, it's not all about that. A lot of it is enjoying the landscape, which we've mm-hmm. talked about. Some of it, some of the marketing for your book, for example, really talks about this is more like an Agatha Christie country house murder. And there certainly is some of that in it as well, you know, and the golden age forms, if people know them, it's lovely to see them in a modern interpretation. I mean, you know, if you're as old as I am, you know, I read Agatha Christie when she was writing. So, you know, for me, I'm already well-grounded in all that, but you guys, many of your readers are probably young and many of them may never have read any of the classic forms. And so they won't appreciate your as much the variations that you introduce or the way you are bringing these classics into more contemporary framework. But that's a lot of fun for older readers because they recognize them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think that that's another thing that's really great about this book is that I think that it can appeal on a lot of those different levels. Like some people might just read it like, ooh, kind of like a girl's trip gone wrong. Like, and that's really appealing. But then also some people are really into it for the gothic aspect and then, or the Agatha Christie type thing. Me, I want all of it, all the time, all together. That's why it's
Greedy reader speaks. And you're right. I mean, you know, many of us are truly greedy about the whole experience, but I'm just saying you can't write for any single reader.
Yeah.
Because
there
are so many different readers. So you just have to write the book that, you know, you're enjoying writing and mm-hmm. people will pick up on different facets of it. I mean, I've done thousands actually by now of author interviews or author events at the store. And it's always interesting to me, especially in a live event where you can see them, that how the author reacts to some questions from the audience, because it's like, did I really write that? Or was that what I meant? Or how did you get that? You know, whatever. I mean, I think authors are often really surprised by readers' reactions.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a great segue into the next question I was going to ask, which is, without getting into spoilers or anything, what do you feel is like the true heart of this book? And like, what do you want readers to take from it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I was thinking about the World War II storyline, I was thinking a lot about the intergenerational trauma that's inherited mm-hmm. with respect to the Holocaust. Because I have family Holocaust history, and so it feels something personal to me of like my ancestors, you know, who were either murdered in the Holocaust or my grandmother like escaped it. And so I think the character of Jade, that felt really meaningful for me to write about like some of the anti-Semitism. You know, it was like light, it wasn't a huge part of the book, but you know, I would say it's like a subplot, the World War II stuff. But yeah, I think the inheritance of trauma because I feel like there's so many books that explore World War II during the time period of World War II, but there aren't like so many books so many novels that talk about the long shadow of the Holocaust, mm-hmm. like in contemporary times. And yeah, I think that felt important to me for this book.
Yeah, and I love that because it is such an interesting juxtaposition with like, again, this very like I don't know, like, I don't know if this is even like correct to say, or if I just sound like weird, but like the modern sense of a girl's trip, like they're going to have this getaway. Totally. And then juxtaposing it with that, with the story that has so much history to it and so much nuance and so much like baggage too. I really thought that that was so interesting, and we don't normally see that in a contemporary thriller. So it gave it just like this really interesting texture, that was just added to the whole great experience.
Thank you.
So I'm curious. Oh, sorry. What?
Oh, no. I was just going to say, I didn't even think about, yeah, you're right. I didn't think about the girls' trip with the World War II, that is, yeah, it's like an interesting combination, but mm-hmm. yeah, I like that it's,
yeah. You like, normally you're thinking like, okay, they're going to like drink wine and like gossip yeah. and whatever. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, there's like these big the serious Holocaust. Things. Yeah. yeah. So we mentioned Agatha Christie, but I'm really curious to know what writers have influenced you. Like, to you, the chateau would not exist without who?
I mean, definitely Agatha Christie, I feel, is like a huge influence for me. And I really came to her late, I would say. I feel embarrassed almost that I didn't read her until, I don't know, 10 years ago that I like mm-hmm. started. And I just tore through all of her books. But I feel like, you know, I think right now in terms of like locked room thrillers, which is like really what I like love and feels exciting to write, you know, I think Lucy Foley's doing mm-hmm. great stuff and Ruth Ware and... I mean, there's so many amazing like modern thriller authors that are inspirational.
You should try Alice Feeney. She's written a book in many ways. Too. I'm going blank on her book last September, yeah. but it has many of the same features, including the older woman. But let me see, you know, going back to the structure, so many of these books that are World War II books and modern are basically a two-track storyline. You know, there's the, you go back to actually being in World War II and forward, and, you know, they track along, but they are completely separate. And what you're saying, Megan, is that this book doesn't do that, that this is a contemporary, as you say, you know, girl's trip story. And then, you know, but you need the older character, right, to make it work that way?
Yeah. That's why I needed the grandmother, because she's the connection to that time.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to structure this story, where you're able to bring in the reverberations and, you know, the down the generation effects of all that trauma. I mean, you know, I won't live long enough, but you guys will probably, to see what may be written about the Ukrainians, for example, and, you know, the incredible trauma that they are. And actually the Russians too, for that matter, many of whom were involuntarily engaged in this war.
Right.
You know, I did a Regency event last night, and I always point out the Regency is having a resurgence because of Bridgerton in part, and also because historical fiction is kind of is having a comeback, because it's part of the genre cycles that are run about every 20 years. But I always point out that, you know, talking about Jane Austen and talking about all of that, there was a war raging for 20 years mm-hmm. during all of that, and no one knew how it was going to come out until Waterloo in June of 1815. And yet, you know, people like Austen are writing, it's flowing right on. But war wasn't so all-encompassing then, was mm-hmm. it? I mean, they were fighting in France, or they were fighting in, you know, the Iberian Peninsula, but they weren't actually fighting in England. But I don't know that we can say that anymore. But even if you're setting anything in France during World War II, in fact, they were fighting in France in World War II. There's not that remoteness that, you know, that you get. Exploring, you know, the traumas that regular people, not just soldiers, but, you know, ordinary people endure in difficult times, I think, is a worthy but often very difficult thing to do justice to. So good for you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm also really interested in my own work in generational trauma, and I kind of approach it not from a historical standpoint, but kind of the what is the word I'm looking for? Just the inheritance of trauma that a grandparent who is traumatized might in turn traumatize their child, and in turn, and it just keeps going down the line. So yeah, I really love your approach to that in this, since that's something I really am just fascinated by in general. Kind of like zooming out a little bit, do you have a specific writing routine? Like, do you have any pre-writing rituals that you have to do? Anything that must be at your desk in order for you to write? Or are you more casual about the whole thing?
Nothing that has to be in my desk. I do my writing at cafes usually. I don't edit at cafes. I usually edit at home, but I like writing fresh stuff at cafes. But I always go on a walk on the beach in the morning without my, I live right next to the beach and without my phone. And that's like my pre-writing. I feel like that to me is like work time. I mean, yeah. Yeah. It is. It's like without it, I feel like I'm not all the plot downloads, and I always get a good idea and I run home and I'm like trying to remember it in my head before I get home. So, you know?
Yeah. I feel like it's always when we're away from our computer that like in the shower or driving where you can't write it down.
Yeah.
I mean, I have like little things. Like I've started to like light a candle and like turn on a little string of Christmas lights just as sort of like a way to plug my mind into the idea that like, okay, it's writing time. Yeah. And I've started in the last few months or so, I've started putting on brown noise when I write, which apparently is different than white noise, but it was brand new to me. Because I was having such a hard time focusing for a while. Even though my house is quiet when I write, like usually I'm home alone, but there's something about the brown noise. Like I said, it's specifically good for like studying or working. So I started doing that and it really helps me like just zone into the page. I don't know why, but yeah.
Sometimes I'm at a cafe where there's a really like annoying conversation or someone's on their phone. So I might try that.
There's like this YouTube video of just 8 straight hours of brown noise, and I just do like a little bit of it every day.
Define brown noise.
It's similar to white noise, and I cannot tell you how it's different, what it is. You just have to like hear it. It's almost like fuller, less. I mean, white noise isn't shrill, but it's like, I don't know. You'd really just have to hear it. And I was a skeptic. I was like, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to do anything. But then it was really helping.
How does it work? Do you turn it on? I've never even heard brown noise.
Yeah. I just found a YouTube video that just has like brown noise for like 8 hours. And so I just turn on that video and have it running in the background as I write.
All right, that makes sense. So,
and then I learned there's green noise and pink noise, and so apparently there's a lot of different noises that are all similar to white noise, but brown noise, I've been swearing by it recently. So I know we've been going for a while, so I want to make sure I ask before we wrap up, or before, if Barbara has any last questions, is there anything you can tell us about what you're working on now, or are you wanting to keep that under wraps?
I think I can say that my next book is coming out next May. Nice. And it's like a similar kind of locked room murder mystery, but it is set in Italy on the Orient Express.
Ooh.
That'll
be a really once again. That's great. How about you, Megan? What are you doing next?
Well, on the immediate horizon, I have my next book comes out in July, Thicker Than Water, and it's about two sisters-in-law who are also best friends and believe that they have this perfect, unbreakable bond until the man who connects them, which is the husband of one and the brother of the other, is accused of a brutal crime, and they have to try to clear his name. But as they start to uncover more things, one of them is more sure than ever that he's innocent, and the other is starting to believe that he's might be guilty. So that's coming out in July. And then in the meantime,
I'm in love with your next book. It's so good.
Thank you.
It's amazing. I was so lucky to read an early copy. I loved it.
Oh, thank you so much. It was like the hardest book I've written, and I had to rewrite it like twice. So I've been so like feeling rocky about how are people going to receive it. So that means a lot.
I've seen such good reviews of it. I adored it. It's like so clever. Also, it's like, I love, I mean, I don't know if I won't say it as a spoiler, but how he's murdered. It's so good. It's so clever. Like, just because I think about murder a lot also. Yeah. So, yeah, smartest murder.
what's the actual title?
It's Thicker Than Water. This is the...
Ah, there's the advanced reading copy.
Yes.
I'm probably looking at one right over there, but I noticed that I counted up for another publisher today. I have 129 ARCs for July.
Wow.
I know. It's publishing, you know, has just mushroomed mm-hmm. in terms of the volume. And also it's very difficult to sort out. I mean, you can't really encompass that many books. And so yeah. Trying to work in or zero in on the ones that you know, want to really highlight and pay attention to, I think is getting increasingly difficult, but yeah. So it's great. Jacob, come and join us and see if we have any questions from the audience, because that's part of the point of being live here.
Yeah, we do have some questions here. This one is from Facebook, from Robin. She's asking, and this can be for both authors, do you write longhand or use a word processor?
Do you want to start?
I typically use my computer, but sometimes if I'm having a scene that feels tricky and I just keep procrastinating writing it, I'll take my notebook to a cafe and I'll force myself to longhand write. Somehow that like frees up the words.
Yeah, and I pretty much exclusively write on my laptop, but I find more in the brainstorming phase that's a lot of times when I will write longhand.
Yeah, me too. I do all my brainstorming in notebooks.
Mm-hmm.
She also asked, do you have a consistent writing time? Did you both want to talk about your writing process a little bit or schedule?
Yeah. I'm a morning person, so I really love doing my writing in the morning, like do my morning thing, you know, my walk, gym, whatever. And then I definitely spend like a few hours like writing whatever my word count of the day is.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I find that I'm freshest in the morning. And I usually set like a particular word count goal for the day as well, which if my deadline isn't like super close, it'll probably be like something super reasonable for me, like 500 words. If my deadline is like getting closer, my like minimum will be 1,000, but then I just pretty much work until I meet that.
All right. This one asked, and this can be for both of you guys too. Have you always wanted to be a writer? And did you want to be an author before you even knew what you wanted to write about?
That's a well-worded question. That second part. Yeah, I'm curious about that for you. Since you did start out with law, did you know that you wanted to be an author as well?
Yeah, always. I don't have a memory of not wanting to. Mm-hmm. Always is what I wanted to be. What about you?
Yeah, same. I remember like I was 6 years old and I wrote this like terrible little story called The Bad Cats that was about some bad cats. And I was just like, oh, you can just create things. And it's like, it's real in a fake way. And that's awesome. And like, yeah, I never had any like practical path. That was another option. I mean, I was teaching for many years, but yeah, this has just always been the thing.
Yeah, me too.
You know, there's a difference between doing or working in a profession and being in love with it. You said that earlier, Jacqueline, that you were not in love with the law. I could say the same thing. I was never in love with it. And in fact, a great trial lawyer said to me one day, you're never going to be a great lawyer. And I was sort of taken aback. And I said, why? And he said, because you're not in love with the law. And, you know.
Well, I really felt that I was never going to be as good as the people in my group who just loved it. Because I was never, yeah, I agree. Yeah, I feel that.
I think that's an important distinction. And, you know, since writing is not immediately lucrative, most writers have to do something else on their journey to become a published author. So,
I was going to say also, you know, I don't think to go from college and then become an author to me, or, you know, at 18, become an author, that to me sounds like like I personally didn't have enough life experience. I think I needed to grow in my craft and, you know, write a lot of bad books that were going to be shoved underneath my butt, my bed, and never see the light of day. So I don't know, I guess it's like a process to think.
For a writer, all life is material, whatever it is you've been. Think about Ian Rankin, who was actually a swineherd in France for a while. I keep waiting for it to show up in one of his thrillers, but you know, I'm sure that he gained some experiences that have played into his work. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Jake?
Yeah, there is a question about your favorite contemporary authors, and then also, did you guys want to talk about some of your inspirations, particularly in the genre that you're writing right now? Did that happen naturally, or did you find an author, a book that inspired you to write in the particular genre that are you writing in now?
I feel like you talked about that a little bit with Lucy Foley and Ruth Ware. Are there others that were sort of your entrance into the genre?
No, I was going to say my other just contemporary authors that I like are auto-buys for me. It's actually, I'm going to name two people who couldn't be more different as authors. It's funny, but I always buy Daniel Silva's books. He writes thriller, but more like political intrigue. Yeah. And I always buy Sophie Kinsella's books. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I read a gamut. They couldn't be more different from each other.
But that all goes into it too. Like I read really widely too. And like, I think we take something from everything, even if it's like a romance and we're writing these dark thrillers, like romances are all about relationships and thrillers have relationships. Like,
totally.
So, for me, I really love Megan Miranda right now for like writers right now in the genre, Marisha Pessel, oh God, every time this happens, suddenly it's like I've never heard of an author in my life. And I forget, even though like there's so many I could name. I also really love an autobiography author for me who she only has, this will be her fourth book coming out, but Rachel Harrison, who she's in the horror genre, but she writes like, it's like oddly comforting horror, like ooh. I don't know how to describe it. Like there are some scary parts, there are some like body horror things, but there's something so comforting and so specifically relatable about her characters that it like, I can't remember what the thing that it was, somebody's blurb for her upcoming book Black Sheep is that it's Dante's Inferno meets, and this is pointless because I can't remember what the thing it meets is, but it was something very not Dante's Inferno that was just like the perfect, yes, it's that vibe. It's something so dark and something light, and it's just so good. So like, and I take a lot of inspiration from her. She's just awesome.
Oh, I'm going to have to check
one, I didn't hear the other author. You said Daniel Silva, but who was the other one?
No, I said Sophie Kinsella.
Oh, Sophie. Oh, okay. Gotcha. Wow, that is wildly different.
I know, it's like the Dante, it's probably the analogy to your Dante thing.
Well, I'm going to be talking to Daniel on July 22nd. So you might want, if you have a question or two you've always wanted to have answered, drop me on.
Yeah, I will.
All right. Anything else, Jacob?
That's it.
Wonderful. Well, ladies, it's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it. Learned a lot.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'm so glad that I got to talk to you about this amazing book because I just, like I said, I loved it. And I'm so glad that other people
can. It meant so much to me. It was the first one I got and I was just, I think I like screamed. I was so happy. But thank you so much.
Well, I was happy to do it.
Well, the two of you are really brilliant together. So thank you very much for giving us a chance to host you. I'll drop Emily Bessler, your publisher, a note and tell her what a charm it was. So thank you very much, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your day. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.